Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome to season 7, the first episode of season 7 of Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast, with me, your host and author, Caroline Foran. For this episode, I am joined by Dr. Claire Kambametu, who has been on the series a few times with me. She is a clinical psychologist. She is one of my absolute go-to experts for distilling a lot of what can be overwhelming jargon into something that we can all very easily digest. She's brilliant. She just articulates everything so well. And for this episode, we are talking about the anxiety that we might experience as a result of consuming pretty much around the clock news, social media, whether it's news on your TV or on your phone or just the social media apps that you might use, and the impact that this is having on our mind, on our anxiety, which we might not be aware of. We might not even think that consuming the news is contributing to anxiety, but it very well could be. And here Claire sheds light on that. And we also offer lots of advice, tips and approaches to making a change if that's what you need in your life to help you further own your anxiety. So happy new year. Welcome back. And I hope you find this as helpful as I did. Dr. Claire Kambametu, I'm so happy to be joined by you once again. You are fast becoming a regular expert of mine on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. Thank you so much for coming back. How are you?
So happy to be joining you. I'm good. It's a really funny question, I think, these days, isn't it? Because I think everybody says, yeah, you know what, things are okay. But in the backdrop of it all, there's obviously this ongoing pandemic. And there's all the trickiness that goes with that.
Yeah, it's definitely like it is the backdrop to everything at the moment. And I just did not think we would be here. I mean, I remember recording a podcast months ago about helping people emerge out of COVID and the anxiety that would go along with that. And certainly in Ireland, we're kind of still dancing around in it. Mm-hmm. I don't know when that will change. And that's what we want to talk about today. So just for anyone who is new to you, we've done 2 episodes before. You were my very first guest helping me shed light on like what exactly is anxiety in the first place, how it happens. And then we did an amazing episode, if I do say so myself, around the 5 P's, which is really helpful for me. And now we're going to talk about, I guess, the anxiety that is might seem innocuous, but is probably very widely experienced and can start to really erode our sense of well-being and lead to like anxiety. And that is just this constant consumption of the news, whether that's on news websites or news TV or social media. I think it's a big issue for a lot of people. And I know you've talked about it on your Instagram for people just to be a little bit mindful of it. But just how much of an impact does the news we consume and the information we consume every day actually have on us?
I found that when the latest resurgence of the virus started to happen, I noticed in myself that I would go to work and the first thing I would do would be to open RTE or the journal. And then I would check in at some point kind of mid-morning if I was in my office, and then at lunchtime. And I just, over the course of a few days, it started to creep in where I just began to check the news more and more often. And I was noticing at the same time that it was making me feel even worse. And there's a really good reason for why we do check news. And it's that when our brain detects a threat, a few things happen in our body. And one of those things is the release of different hormones that are associated with our fight or flight anxiety, fight, flight, freeze anxiety management response. But part of that response is to focus our attention on that threat. Because if you think about it, if something's trying to eat us or chase us or steal our food, we don't want to be distracted by other things in that moment. We want to be focusing on the thing that is actually the threat to us. So our brain focuses in, and we're more likely then to keep trying to find information out about that particular threat, about the thing that we're scared of. So it's really normal, I think, for people to start to want to look at the news and hear more about what's going on and keep up to date with things. But the side effect of that is that every time we get hit by that threat, it prolongs our anxiety and stress response.
I think people probably don't realize that, like when you say the word threat there, people think of that as something very much in their vicinity, and the news can seem quite abstract. So is it being perceived as a threat on a personal level when we read the news about something else going on in the world, even something far away in the world? Do we have the same reaction to that negative news where our threat response is kind of triggered?
I think everybody is different. That's important to say. But on a biological level, even if we're not emotionally responding to something, when we are informed or told or become aware of something really bad that happens, it subconsciously challenges what are called our core beliefs. So our beliefs about our safety, I suppose, in the world, our capacity to deal with things, who we are and who we are with other people. And so when we're getting this information about something bad that's happening, those core beliefs are constantly being challenged and being chipped away at. And so we mightn't even be conscious of the fact that our body is having a biological stress response. But when we're faced with it, it happens in the same way as if you step out onto a road and a car whizzes by. Our bodies are really biological in lots of ways in how they respond to things. And threat and threat detection is probably one of the most subtle and immediate kind of impulsive things that our body does react to.
And would empathy play a role in, I mean, I feel sometimes like when I feel like I have such an empathetic nature to the point that it can be kind of go against me, and that I take on other people's problems or emotions too much, or I can relate too much to someone, or I can put myself in someone else's shoes so successfully that I feel perhaps what they might feel. The human nature element of seeing anyone else suffering or hearing of any bad news, that common humanity element, is that's going to trigger our stress response as well?
I suppose it can do. I think the thing to be aware of is that empathy and empathizing with other people is an incredibly kind of potent superpower that we can tap into, because people who are empathic tend to be more empathic towards themselves. And we know that people who are more empathic towards themselves tend to have better mental health overall. But also it helps us as a social species to be more functional in that regard and to be more socially successful. And again, what the research is showing in the last number of years is that actually that idea of IQ that we used to have, like our kind of intelligence levels, isn't as big a predictor of success in life and thriving as our emotional intelligence. And empathy is something that falls under that emotional intelligence. But I suppose whether it's empathy or our attention being drawn to a bad news story for any whatever reason, they can both trigger our, I don't want to say that empathy causes the stress response, because I think the stress response will happen to maybe to a lesser degree for some people and a greater degree for more in response to what we perceive as a threat.
Okay.
And I think what you said there as well about how COVID isn't really, you know, it's not a threat that people are kind of waking up every morning and necessarily thinking, it's out there, it's going to get me, because we've become used to living with it. We've adjusted to a degree. Our brain is no longer maybe tuning into it in the way that it was back in the early days, but it is still out there. And every time we hear a news story, we are reminded of that and our sense of safety in the world. Because like if we actually tapped into how vulnerable we are as a species or as humans, and how fragile life is, and all of the threats that are out there in the world, sure, none of us would get out of bed in the morning, never mind leave the house, because it's scary. And so we have to kind of operate in order to function in our day-to-day lives with a kind of like the world is generally safe worldview. And so whatever the threat is, whether it's war and the empathy you might feel for other people through that, or an awareness of COVID or some other threat, hearing about something bad that happens, that is kind of tapping into our innate understanding of the fact that life is fragile.
And that's really scary. Do you think there is a lot of instances, especially in the last 2 years, where people are experiencing anxiety and maybe they haven't connected the dots between their consumption of news and it elevating that stress and anxiety? Do you think people are even aware that consuming news like that to that extent, which especially with our phones, where it's not just the 6 o'clock news every evening, it's constant. Do you think that people are aware that that is creating a constant home of anxiety?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. My sense is that if we were, then the World Health Organization wouldn't have felt it necessary to issue guidelines around how much news we should all be consuming to protect our mental health. And they did that in the throes of the first wave of the pandemic. And so I think most of us are going through our lives, me included, because I know, you know, people think that because I'm a psychologist, I have all of this sorted. Of course I don't. I'm human first and foremost. And we go through our lives often not even being aware that our anxiety is really triggered unless we have a panic attack, or maybe over time we stop sleeping or our appetite changes or we get these real physical symptoms. But sometimes it takes quite a lot of anxiety building in order for us to get to that point.
100%.
And so there's all of these triggers for our anxieties, whatever they may be, whether it's about our safety or health or our relationships or our job or whatever it is in life. You know, we're being triggered quite a lot through the day without even realizing it. And so I don't think people are aware of the impact of watching the news and watching and hearing about lots of bad news.
I mean, it mightn't be the sole reason why someone is suddenly having trouble sleeping and suddenly experiencing that anxiety, but it certainly would be, it could be a contributing factor when you add in all the other daily stresses of life and this very legitimate threat that we've all been confronted with. And we've had to condition ourselves. Like I keep saying to people, don't underestimate the significance that COVID will have had on just your general resilience, because you step outside your door, you need to be mentally doing checks of like, have I got my mask? Am I safe? Where can I go? Where is my distance? And I think that for me anyway, I mean, I think I have the awareness of it. I'm very aware of my mental health and anxiety, but I think so many people who I've spoken to are experiencing anxiety for the first time, like never would have had a flutter of it in the past. And suddenly they're like, why? Oh, I don't understand where this is coming from. And I think what's really important to realize when it comes to consuming news and social media and everything, it seems like that would be ridiculous on its own to cause anxiety. What people don't realize is how stress can build up and build and build and build and turn into anxiety when it's not addressed, or when we don't bring that stress response down. And that's where the news, if correct me if I'm wrong, can become a little more of an issue over time.
Yes. Yeah. Trigger for it. And let's not forget, at this stage in the pandemic, I think it's really important for us to appreciate what our brains have been going through. And so that threat that we started to become acutely aware of nearly 20 months ago now has been kind of circling around us, where maybe some days we feel more in touch with it, or some weeks and then some less. But it's still out there. And so our bodies have been in this really, and our brains have been in this really unusual state in the last couple of years, where they have been constantly going in and out of the fight, flight, freeze response. And the impact of that is twofold. The first is that the part of our brain that controls that response, which is our amygdala, it's at the top of our brainstem, so where your head meets your neck. That's been more activated because of the threat that we're facing. And what that means is that there's less activity in our prefrontal cortex, which is the bit behind your forehead. And that part of your brain is responsible for all of the things that you do on a daily basis that help you to rationalize, make good decisions, kind of control your behavior, impulse control or thought control, plan, organize, like all of those kind of higher order thinking skills. So the things that we might use, say, to go to work or to respond to a kid or a family member when they're distressed or freaking out and we're trying to calm them, or, you know, all of those kind of regulatory functions that we, that our brain engages in. And so it's harder for us to do all that stuff. It's harder for us to do the things that we might have found easier before the pandemic. And that's another source of stress for people, because I'm meeting people, certainly at the moment, who are saying, you know, I'm really anxious and I'm also really tired and I don't know what's going on. And my tiredness and my, you know, not being able to do the stuff that I usually do, or my different responses to things, is also stressing me out. So there's this kind of cumulative effect on our bodies and on our minds that we have been through in the, or that has been caused by us going through this thing for the last 20 months. I don't want to sound all doom and gloom about it though. I think it's really important to acknowledge where we're at. Because for me anyway, by acknowledging it and kind of allowing myself to understand what's going on, I'm actually tired because this is an insane situation that we have been facing and my body and mind has been trying to cope with it as best as possible, as opposed to kind of criticizing myself and going, what's wrong with me? Why don't I have more energy? Come on, yeah. Claire. Like, you know, we can allow ourselves to be a bit more compassionate, I think, when we can understand what's actually happening for us.
Yeah, I think to begin by just understanding consuming media and news, and especially when it's of the negative kind, understanding the impact that can have on your biology is like the first step, and then not berating yourself for it, because like you say, it's such a natural instinct to want to get this information. Mm-hmm. I feel like there seems to be two types of people. So there's the person who is like, this, the news is completely overwhelming me. I actually can't go there. I can't look at it. And that would be me. So I remember I was pregnant at the time and COVID was really ramping up and I was on news sites bored a little bit. I'd be lying in bed and I'd just be scrolling. And I even like got sucked into all these comment sections. The kinds of people who are commenting tend to be more doom and gloomers, yes, more kind of misery porn. And I just was aware that it was making me feel overwhelmed. And I know that feeling overwhelmed on one day might seem innocuous, but if you're doing it all day, every day over time, that's going to reduce my ability to be able to rationalize certain things, mm-hmm, or feel like I had energy. And I certainly didn't have much of it when I was pregnant. So I made the decision to just completely turn it off. And I said to my partner and stuff like, you let me know what I need to know. I felt like with COVID, I could only control what guidelines I was following. I could only do my best to wear my masks, do social distancing, mm-hmm, adhere to the guidelines. And beyond that, I couldn't control what else was happening in the world about it. So that was my coping mechanism, was to kind of make my world a bit smaller. Although there's an argument that it's critical to stay really well informed. But then there's another type of person who feels like their anxiety will be worse if they don't know everything that's going on. And mm-hmm, they need to know everything. And they think that's going to keep them from being anxious, but actually it's feeding it more. Would you agree in those two responses towards the news? I guess neither one is necessarily the best.
Well, I think it's really important to differentiate between, and I know this is incredibly hard to do when somebody is feeling anxious, but like we were talking about, awareness is kind of the first stage to then deciding how you want to respond. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really important to try and differentiate between what is useful worry and what's useless worry. And so useful worry being those things that you were talking about, you know, I can only worry about things that I can control in this moment right now. And then worrying about all of that other stuff that I cannot control is just going to be an additional thing for me to worry about and something that I find stressful. So I actually think the first response, and everybody knows themselves best as well, I do want to say, you know, I can't speak, yeah, for everybody in this, but I think that response that you had was a really healthy one, because okay, you knew what you needed to do in order to control your useless worry.
And then my in-laws come over and they're like, and did you see this in the news? And I'm like, yeah, no, I haven't. So then I become a really poor conversationalist because I don't know what's going on in the world. And I'm like, shit, I should really know some things. Because I just felt, yeah, like you can't take on the problems of the whole world. You have to look after yourself first.
Absolutely.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
What can someone look out for if they think, oh no, that doesn't affect me, but they're feeling anxious? Would it be just like a feeling of overwhelm, or would it be less obvious, do you think, if the constant consumption of news was really negatively impacting them over time?
I think a really good way to test that out is to do a day without the news.
Mm.
And if you're somebody who's really become kind of addicted to it because of you wanting to know information about what's going on, then that's a problem in some ways. And I guess that highlights it. Like, if you can't do a day without checking the news, then it's doing something for you.
Yeah.
Or it's doing something to you. But so I think the first thing is to try and do a day without it, and then see how you feel. See how you feel, or do a half day. Sorry, I'm kind of rewinding here, because I do think the very first thing is actually awareness, is going, wait a second, in comparison to 2 months ago or a month ago, am I checking the news more often? And what function is this serving? And people will know themselves. I think if you ask your body, your kind of instinct, rather than your rational mind, is this helping me? Is this serving me? People will know whether it is or not instinctively. And then the next thing to do is to actually just see how you feel after you've checked the news next time. You know, see how you feel when you read something about COVID. Notice, tune into those fight, flight, freeze symptoms that might be in your body. And I suppose anxiety is one of the most physical emotions, I think, that we have. You know, you feel it very quickly in your body. And so just tuning into, actually, did this make me feel better? Do I feel better now, or do I feel worse?
Okay.
Just those really basic checks.
Yeah, that's really simple, but really very effective advice. If someone came down from the moon now, and like, mm-hmm. if it was me, I missed the last 2 years, and you told me, oh, we've been living in the midst of a global pandemic for the last 18 or whatever months, and mm-hmm. you know, you won't be able to see people, you'd be wearing a mask. Like, I probably would have had the most horrific panic attack on getting that news from zero.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we get to the point where we become so exposed to a threat that we kind of calm down the threat response and we become almost desensitized to it? Or is that threat response staying elevated and we're just getting used to being stressed?
I think, and I suppose this is my own kind of surmising from reading various bits and pieces and putting them together myself, I think that both happens. I think as a species, we are remarkably adaptable. Look at the way that we adapt to different situations, to different climates, to different challenges all of the time in our lives personally, and then on a global scale. And so I think there is an element of adaptation here where we're faced with the situation and we're finding ways to live our lives within that situation. But I also think that there is a low level threat that is surrounding us all of the time, and that no matter how much rationalizing or denial or kind of psychological defensiveness we engage in around that, that our brains and our bodies are more attuned to this threat than maybe our thoughts are. And so I think both things are happening. I think that even in a subtle way, we're all probably experiencing heightened threat level and then a heightened fight, flight, freeze or stress response. But also we are becoming more adaptable and more flexible and trying to live our lives in positive ways despite it. And those things help us, you know, when we can adapt to do, like, I mean, at the start, you know, we were like, well, how are we going to live without seeing each other? Okay, well, let's use Zoom. And everybody kind of moved online or everybody did those things that could help them to increase positivity in their lives while also living with the situation that we're in. And so all of those little adaptations have helped and help us to cope, but that just doesn't get rid of the overarching threat that there is.
No. And I think such a large part of it has to do with the way in which we consume the news these days. Although I'm just thinking, you know, back in the days when you just had your 1 hour of news on the TV, the one TV channel that everyone watched years ago, maybe we would have been so anxiously awaiting that time of day to get that news that that would have been maybe not so good either. But I feel like, and this doesn't matter whether it's COVID news or anything, but just the constant picking up of your phone and the constant influx of information, like that alone, that stimulation has to be also contributing to stress as well.
Sure. Yeah. And I think, well, I don't know, for me, when we were back in the days of only having an hour of the news on, I used to have a freak out once a day, but only because I couldn't watch Home and Away if somebody was already watching the news on the one TV in the house. My, how times have changed. But I do think that the constant stimulation and the exposure to different things, I think there's positives, obviously, to being more informed, being more aware of different issues around the world, you know, being able to enhance our understanding of different situations and what's happening. I think that's a positive thing in some ways. But I think there's also a lot of emotional threat. So going back to what we were saying about how COVID kind of threatens our sense of safety when we're reminded of it, there are lots of things that do that. You know, you think about when you look at social media and somebody seems to be doing something perfectly, maybe, you know, their whole life isn't perfect, but they seem to be like the perfect mother, or the perfect partner, or, you know, you have those thoughts where you're like, oh God, I wish I was like that. There's a threat in that. There's a, I'm not good enough in that. And so we're constantly exposed to things that we can compare ourselves to and fall short, or bad things happening, or the idea of bad things happening. So it's not just COVID for me, no. This is my understanding of it. It's actually being constantly exposed to so much information all of the time in a way that is quite addictive, because we all know what it feels like to just like randomly reach for your phone and then go, what am I doing?
Yeah. And just that addictive nature, it becomes like a nervous tick almost, that you keep picking up, you keep opening the same apps, you keep clicking refresh. And I think that we think that it's like scrolling on your social media. And again, like, I completely agree. It's like, no, it doesn't even have to be anything to do with the news, but we think it's passive. We think we're passively scrolling, but we're taking in all of that information on some level. And like, whether we're comparing ourselves to someone else and that is received as a threat, or whether it's some bad news or something that we think we should have been doing, but we're not doing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a lot of stimulation. That's a lot to ask of your brain from one end of the day to the next. And then to just switch off and go to sleep as though you've no worries.
Exactly. It's huge. And if you think about what our brains are kind of designed to do, they're designed to help us to survive fundamentally. And we do that in a few different ways. But if you were, you know, if we were living thousands of years ago, your brain is sitting there at your cave door or your cave, whatever, entrance, and scanning the plain in front of you and looking for threats, looking for things that are a threat to your survival. And so we are doing that. We're not living in caves anymore, and we're not looking out onto the horizon, but we're doing it with our mobile phones. We're doing it with our social media, and our brain is designed to pick up what it sees as threats first and foremost, because that's what helps us to live. And so whatever we're scrolling through, our brain is looking for information that suggests it's a threat. And that's exhausting. If nothing else, it's an exhausting process for our brains to be engaged in all of the time.
In all my talk about social comparison and how unhealthy that is, just hearing you say it there, I don't think I've ever realized that actually it's a threat. It's not just apples and oranges. It's actually, am I good enough? Am I less than? That is actually perceived as a threat to your body. So it's not just, oh, don't compare yourself. You're actually making your body feel as though it's under threat when it doesn't need to be. It's inviting in threats that don't need to be there in your bedroom, in the morning when you're feeling vulnerable. So I think it's really important to become aware of that. Not that you have to go and live in a hole, in a cave, and never have any news or any information or hear about anybody else, but just to be aware of it. And then to curate your newsfeed on Instagram, certainly. See how you feel when you look at certain things on Instagram. And if you feel like there's any little twinge of negativity around how you feel about yourself, like, then there must be some sort of threat response happening there. And then just mute to your heart's content. Like, I have gotten so militant with the content that I consume. And sometimes it's aspirational, sometimes it's relatable. And I'm like, sometimes I don't want either. Sometimes I just want content that is like a night, like there's one art page that I follow, and it's just really soothing videos of beautiful, just art things. You can just see hands like painting and stuff. And that's such a, it's neutral content. It doesn't have any impact on how I feel about myself. So that kind of thing has been really helpful for me. And like I say, completely cutting back on the news that I never turn on the TV. If the TV is out of my house, it's Cocoa Bloody Melon for the baby. So there's not, like, I wouldn't mind with the news. But let's talk about, I suppose, asking people to outmaneuver these massive tech companies and these massive media conglomerates that, while we think are there to just report and give us information, they're not. Like, they are motivated, bottom line, by keeping us addicted to these websites, on these channels, watching 24-hour news cycle, keep going back for more, keep clicking in, commenting, engaging. It's not necessarily a goodwill thing of like, this is information you really should know and need to know. It's like, how can we keep people on this website? So like, we have to be aware of that to begin with.
Yes, absolutely. And they can see the neuroscience that's emerged over the last few years is fascinating, that when we click, when we get a like, or when we get a comment, or when somebody interacts with us on social media, our brain releases dopamine, which is one of the same neurotransmitters that is released with the use of various addictive drugs. Dopamine is a highly addictive chemical within our brains, or something that is triggered by addictive chemicals. And that creates this desire for us to engage in the same behavior over and over again, because dopamine makes us feel really good. So if you do something, you get a hit of dopamine, you feel great, you're more likely to do it again in the future. And that's why we get addicted to social media and to those interactions. I loved what you said there about curating your news feed. And I think even going one step further than that, like curating your life to a degree, but actually, yeah, how you use your phone, how you engage with news, social media, information is really key. Because like you were saying, we can't live in a hole. This is our lives. And there's certain aspects of it that are important to us all, to keep in touch with people and to have access to information and to be inspired by content that we see. But it's about, how do we engage with that actually? And that's where we have choice. Once you become aware of something that's either good for you or not good for you, you can then choose whether to engage with it or not to engage with it. And curating your tech use and your use of social media, it just becomes vital in that.
Absolutely. Another thing I did was I deactivated and deleted my Twitter account. Twitter is not something that's on my phone, because I really found, of all the social media platforms and news platforms, that for me was just like a bunch of negative non sequiturs. Like, that's all it ever is. And it's like, the negativity breeds more negativity. It's like the negativity bias in a social media app is Twitter for me. People can be so angry and sarky and jibey and snipey. And I found that whenever I went on, I was scrolling, I could feel this sense of like this pull towards the ground. And it was nothing. People didn't go there to really share good news. People just go there, get in a bad mood. I mean, obviously there's benefits to Twitter. It's been really a part of people's voice and businesses and everything. But for me, making that decision was one thing. I was like, you know what? I don't need this. And I don't, just because something exists and because something is popular doesn't mean you have to subscribe to it. I was like, this isn't for me. I don't need it for work, really. Wasn't really relevant there. It's not doing me any favors. I don't have any really reason to be on it from a social perspective. So I just said, what's the point? And that takes a little bit of confidence as well, I think, is to know that just because there's platforms there doesn't mean you need to be part of them.
I find it really fascinating, actually, because I don't think there's any other area of our lives. Well, maybe not any other area, but when you think about things that we spend our time doing, so whatever you're into, I don't think most people feel like, oh, well, I have to be into whatever everybody else is into. Some people might, I suppose, feel a bit of social pressure or think, oh, well, that's a cool thing to do. But like, some people, like, you know, certain types of films and other people don't. Some people like to read, other people like to write, other people run, some people don't run. You know, we're all aware, usually by the time we get to adulthood, that we have different likes and interests. But when it comes to social media, there's this idea that actually we should all be on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or whatever it is. And that if you're not, that you're somehow missing out. Whereas we don't feel that in relation to the other things that we spend our time doing. I find that really interesting. There is a pressure around it.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes drives people. I know it drives me to use it sometimes. And actually being aware of the pressure of the kind of the emotion that it creates within you, and then choosing how you engage with it is vital for all of our health and well-being.
I'm curious, if someone makes a change around the news or the content they consume, is it likely, I don't know, maybe there's been a study done on this, maybe you're just familiar with it in your work, it's like when someone goes from smoking 60 fags a day to trying to quit, there's going to be an initial, oh Jesus, like I need that. That like anxiety might actually get worse in the short term. That feeling of, I need to know what's going on, that we should be aware of that, allow for that. And then for me anyway, sometimes I go away and I leave my phone at home,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to leave my phone at home, but I know it's good for me to do that. And in the car on the way, or I remember in the airport, I was going away, this is before COVID, and I wanted to just take a break from it. And my husband he went to the bar or something, and I straight away went to put my hand in my pocket. I was like, I don't have my phone. I can't scroll. I have to sit here and take in my surroundings. And I felt this like complete, like I've left my limb at home. And so I had that spike, like an addiction, and then it settled. And then I was so much calmer over the weekend. It was so powerful that I was like, okay, you need to do this more often. Should people be aware that they might think, well, I don't feel any better not consuming the news, but you might feel better after a while if you tone it down.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think, and it's hard because you need to be really, really in tune with yourself, I think, to have the awareness that you did in that situation about what was going on for you. Because for some people, they might just feel the same type of anxiety, or they might just feel anxious when they're reading the news and then anxious without their phone, and not differentiate between the two types of anxiety or where both are coming from.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really important point, that you might not feel better immediately. That again, dopamine is something that our brain really responds to very quickly. And when we don't get that dopamine hit, we tend to try and keep looking for it for a little while until we stop having it for quite a while, and then our brain settles a bit.
On that note, like, do you think we get a dopamine hit from consuming bad news?
Sorry, I should be careful here. So the dopamine hit comes from, I haven't read any research about dopamine and bad news,
okay.
but it comes from engaging with social media.
Okay.
And so when we get more positive, I suppose, engagement on social media, I don't know, I'm not a neuropsychologist, I suppose, or a neurologist. So I just hands up want to say that this is not my area of expertise, but I'd imagine that what we get from consuming bad news would be more adrenaline and cortisol, which are the chemicals that are involved in the stress response. And so they have a slightly different impact. Adrenaline can sometimes feel good. It can sometimes feel a bit like excitement,
mm-hmm.
but it's not as kind of hard hitting as dopamine would be.
Okay. So in that scenario, it might be more a case of just like a habit as opposed to a reward.
Yes, exactly. Well said. Well said.
Another question for you. I don't know if you'll be able to answer, but even apart from us consuming the news, do you find, like, is there a reason why people tend to share bad news? Like, we pick up the phone and my mom will tell me about someone she knows, like the latest mm-hmm. person to have died. Like, what is that human nature thing of, like, are we trying to help each other keep an eye out for threats by sharing bad news more so than we'll share some good news?
I think there's lots of reasons for it. I mean, I don't want to be too cynical, but I know some people who really enjoy sharing bad news. There's
yeah, like
of,
misery porn is like the proper word.
Misery porn, exactly. And so there's some people who do, I think, experience pleasure or maybe an increased sense of safety or something positive because there's a feeling of, oh my gosh, thank God that's not happening to me.
Okay, yeah.
But then I also think that there's something very human about trying to connect with another person when you are kind of emotionally triggered. So I know for me, sometimes if I hear something particularly shocking or particularly sad or upsetting, saying it to another person and having them kind of validate that experience and go, I know it's so sad, is a way of connecting with another person. And so I think that can drive sharing that type of information as well, as just our need for emotional connection with other people. And those experiences that trigger emotions more strongly are going to drive us then to connect emotionally with other people around those times.
So we've mentioned the importance of awareness, and hopefully just us having this conversation and someone listening will have given them the awareness around the impact that constantly picking up the phone and reading the news every day can have on them. What else can we do? Are there any further steps we can take? I know the WHO had given some guidelines, and you had shared some on your Instagram. What can someone, when they finish listening to this, put into action?
So the WHO had recommended that we don't check the news any more than 3 times a day. That was the limit that they, through their research, had established didn't have a negative impact on anxiety and low mood. So that's the first thing, is just notice how many times you're checking it. Notice how it's making you feel. And then I think what's really important, and it's something that I know you've spoken about before, Caroline, that, you know, these emotions, whether it's anxiety or fear or sadness or whatever it is, are just part of the human experience. And so we have to teach ourselves that they are okay to feel, like that they are uncomfortable and frightening and not a nice experience either in your thoughts or in your body, but that none of it is going to kill us. And if we can learn to be accepting of our emotional states, then we can choose how to engage with them. Because oftentimes we get caught up in trying to resist our emotional states, and that in turn makes them worse. So I think if you are feeling anxious, I know your books have been incredibly helpful to so many people. And there's a few different approaches that I have found really useful as well. Acceptance and commitment therapy in particular, which teaches us how to accept our emotional states and then make commitments in terms of how we want to deal with them. So if you are feeling more anxious when you're consuming the news, or you notice that social media usage makes you feel worse, then make a commitment to yourself about how you're going to reduce those things and how you're going to do things that actually are beneficial for your mental health instead. Again, easier said than done. I know it's not that simple, but it's a good place to start.
And it's all trial and error. I mean, like, obviously, we know it's critical to be aware of what's going on in the world right now. It's never more than ever, because it, you know, it really actually affects every single person when they leave their house at the moment. So we can't really bury our head in the sand, but we can see how we feel before we consume the news and how we feel directly after. We can look at the news and think, how much of this can I actually control? I can control my reaction to it. I can't control what's happening in the world. Like, you can't, it's a lot to take on. So you can only control the controllables. So I think being aware of that and then seeing how you feel afterwards, and then doing a little trial, like you say, where you give it a day or two and see, like, if it's possible to leave your phone at home for a weekend, if you're going away, and it's only 2 days, you'll come back to it and just see how you feel.
So inspiring, Caroline. I'm listening to you talk, and when you said, you know, leave your phone at home for a weekend, I actually felt my stomach flip. My anxiety kicking in, going, oh, can I do that? That's like, and then I was thinking, gosh, well, if that's what's making you anxious, then that's definitely what you need to do, is actually to break that connection, break that thread.
Yeah. I mean, if the thought of it makes you feel anxious, then there you go.
Yeah.
If the thought of not looking at the news or looking at it only once a day is making you feel like your tummy's flipping, then maybe that's what you need to try. And because you're doing it in a controlled way, it's not like someone just stole your phone and you're gone. If you're doing it in a controlled way, I think that makes you, well, for me anyway, more, you're in the driving seat of it. So then you then feel more empowered by it, by what you're doing. And like, you've already taken action and you're doing something positive from the get-go to help you own your anxiety in whatever area of life it's coming from.
Mm-hmm. Exactly that.
Claire, I could talk to you about everything all day, especially about anxiety and psychology and everything. You just distill everything so perfectly. You say things that I'm like, oh my God, like the penny has dropped. So I can't thank you enough for joining me again. I hope you will come back again soon and we'll tackle another topic. I hope this has been helpful for people. It's been certainly helpful for me to understand the impact that it has on a biological level, on a psychological level. And just to cap everything off by saying the most important thing is to not beat yourself up about it, and to understand that it's such a natural thing and all of these apps are designed to make us stay on them. It's not your fault, you're not doing anything wrong, but you can compassionately maybe decide that you deserve something a little bit different.
Well said. Thanks for having me, Caroline.
Thank you, Claire.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.